on the other side of the mountain, then? Me? Gosh, no, said the raven. That's croaking territory over there. Just checking. The broom rose higher and set off above the trees in a hubwards direction. The raven ruffled its feathers and blinked. Damn, it said. It shuffled around the tree to where the death of rats was sitting. Squeak! Look, if you want me to do this undercover work, you've got to get me a book on ornithology, okay? Said Quoth. Let's go, or I'll never keep up. Tick. Death found Famine in a fish restaurant in Genua. He had a booth all to himself and was eating duck and dirty rice.
Oh, said Famine. It's you.
Yes, we must ride. You must have got my message.
Pull up a chair, Famine hissed. They do a very good alligator sausage here.
I said, we must ride.
Why?
Death sat down and explained. Famine listened, although he never stopped eating.
I see, he said at last. Thank you, but I think I shall sit this one out.
Sit it out? You're a horseman.
Yes, of course. But what is my role here?
I beg your pardon.
No famine appears to be involved, does it? A shortage of food, per se, as such?
Well, no. Not as such, obviously, but...
So I would, as it were, be turning up just to wave. No, thank you.
You used to ride out every time, said Death accusingly.
Famine waved a bone airily.
We had proper apocalypses in those days, he said, and sucked at the bone. You could sink your teeth into them.
Nevertheless, this is the end of the world.
Famine pushed his plate aside and opened the menu.
There are other worlds, he said. You're too sentimental, Death. I've always said so.
Death drew himself up. Humans had created famine, too. Oh, there had always been droughts and locusts. But for a really good famine, for fertile land to be turned into a dust bowl by stupidity and avarice, you needed humans. Famine was arrogant.
I am sorry, he said, to have trespassed on your time.
He went outside, into the crowded street, all alone. The stick swooped down towards the plains and levelled off a few hundred feet above the ground.
We're on our way now, shouted Lutse, pointing ahead.
Lobsang looked down at a slim wooden tower hung with complicated boxes. There was another one in the far distance, a toothpick in the morning mist.
Semaphore towers, Lutse shouted. Ever seen them?
Only in the city, Lobsang shouted above the slipstream.
It's the Grand Trunk, the sweeper shouted back. Runs like an arrow all the way to the city. All we have to do is follow it.
Lobsang clung on. There was no snow beneath them, and it looked as though spring was well advanced. And therefore it was unfair that here, that much nearer the sun, the air was frigid and was being driven into his flesh by the wind of their travel.
It's very cold up here. Yes, did I tell you about the double-knit combinations?
Yes.
I've got a spare pair in my sack. You can have them when we stop.
Your own personal pair?
Yes, second best, but well darned.
No, thank you.
They've been washed.
Lutse?
Yes?
Why can't we slice when we're on this thing?
The tower was well past them. The next one was pencil-sized already. The black and white shutters on the boxes were twinkling in the sunlight.
Do you know what happens if you slice time on a magically powered vehicle travelling at more than 70 miles an hour?
No?
Me neither, and I don't want to find out.
Tick. Igor opened the door before the second knock. An Igor might be filling coffins with earth in the cellar or up on the roof adjusting the lightning conductor, but a caller never had to knock twice.
Lady Thep,
he muttered, nodding his head. He looked blankly at the six figures behind her.
We have called to inspect progress, said Lady Lejean.
And these ladies and gentlemen, Lady Thep?
My associates,
said her ladyship, matching Igor's blank stare.
If you would be so kind as to step inside, I will see if the master is in,
said Igor, observing the convention that a true butler never knows the whereabouts of anyone in the house until they decide they want it to be known. He backed through the door into the workshop and then lurched into the kitchen.